Hello, and welcome to So You Think You Can Rule Persia, the podcast where we rate and review all the kings of Persia from Dayokis to Yazdegerd III. I am Sariel, and my pronouns are they, them.
And I'm Umberto, and my pronouns are he, him. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 62, Bahram the First.
Hello, did you miss us? Hopefully not too much.
It's been a sporadic month, but hey, we're here. Hello, we're back. You get to find out what happens after the last episode.
Hey.
And you don't have to look it up on Wikipedia. It's great.
We did the work for you.
Yes. Good. Yeah, so we kind of left on a bit of a cliffhanger last time. Because, if you remember, we had that Hormizd, the chosen heir of Shapur, died prematurely and then was succeeded by not his heir. And we need to figure out what was going on there. So this is where we find out what that is. So, yeah. What are your thoughts about Bahram, Sariel? Any expectations about him?
Well, what even happened last time? I know it was quiet, right?
Yes. Well, basically, yeah, I'll give a quick recap. After the great successes of Shapur the First, who, you know, defeated a bunch of Romans, had three Roman emperors submit to him.
Yeah, it was that was an intense episode, yes.
Bunch of cool stuff. He then left a very detailed list of his sons in order of which was the best
right, son. Yes. And then that was not followed.
And then the first one was followed. Hormizd became King of Kings, did a reasonably good job for what we can tell. He was fair enough. But then he died and was succeeded by
mysterious circumstances.
Bahram, who was not on the list of the best sons. He was not mentioned at all.
I think he was murdered.
So, yeah, Hormizd, questionable ending.
Mm-hmm.
We'll discuss it more today. So do you think Bahram will do a good job with his questionably gotten throne, or will he just mess everything up for everyone?
Oh, I think this is going to be catastrophic. Because he wasn't even in the list, and he was really hurt about it, apparently. Clearly.
Yeah.
And I think he wasn't in the list for a reason. Probably because his father didn't think that he had the right disposition to be a successful ruler. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a juicy episode, but not necessarily good for the Empire. I'm bracing
good
myself.
Stuff. We'll find out. There is an answer to a question you had like two episodes ago under Shapur. You will find out along the way. So, okay, let's get started with Bahram the First. So, Bahram was, as we mentioned, a son of Shapur, and based on a second list that Shapur had, he seems to have been the oldest son. Because in a list of sacrifices that Shapur made for his family, he is listed first, as opposed to the list of people who were there by merit. Now, we also know that Bahram's mother was not of royal blood, it looks like. Looks like his mother was of a lower social status, maybe not a full wife, maybe just a concubine. We don't have the details, but it's a lesser degree, which might also explain why he wasn't mentioned in the prestige list, because, well, he's just like a son I have, but not a good one. So, sure.
Not in my top 10.
Yeah, not in my top 10 sons. You know, it's fine.
I have enough of these, you know. We don't have to focus on all of them. That is just... Anyway. Oof.
Yeah, so Bahram was probably born sometime in the 210s. So this means that he was there at the beginning of when the Sassanid Empire was getting started. And by the time that Shapur the First dies, he is in his early 60s, late 50s. That's roughly the age you need to imagine him at. But during the reign of his father, Shapur, Bahram was given a kingdom to govern as a prince. And as Shapur's esteem of him would suggest, he wasn't given a very important kingdom. He was given the kingdom of Jilan, which is a small region of the old kingdom of Atropatene on the coast of the Caspian Sea. And while it was known for providing excellent infantry, it wasn't an especially prosperous region of the empire. It wasn't an especially endangered region of the Empire because it's not on the border with anyone. So it's like, yeah, you're governing some mountains next to the sea. It's fine. It's not great. And it's especially entirely different from the Kingdom of Armenia that Hormizd had when he was the heir. While Armenia was big and powerful and risky, Jalan is small and weak and safe. So that is what Shapur thought Bahram could handle. But since we're mentioning this, it is a good time to introduce another brother, because he'll be coming into our story for a while. Okay, looking at the list of merit that Shapur had, first in merit was Hormizd. We've seen him, he's dead. Second in merit was another son called Shapur, and he was meant to succeed, but he died before Shapur the king, so we don't hear about him more. He died between the list being compiled and Shapur dying, so doesn't get to have his position. But third in position is a man called Narseh. Narseh was the fourth born son of Shapur, and seems to have been also the son of a royal princess.
Huh.
So it seems to have been Sassanid on both sides of his family.
Hmm.
We're not sure what exactly the entity of this princess was, if she was a sister of Shapur, if she was a cousin, whatever, but she was a Sassanid. And well, Narseh was considered very important, and so he was given basically the mirror position to Armenia, which is the kingdom of Sakastan, which is this large and important kingdom in the east of the empire, bordering the Kushan Empire. So it's the parallel. It's doing the same things, slightly less important, but still an important role. So according to Shapur's list, Narseh should have been the one to succeed Hormizd.
Hmm.
But he won't. We'll see what happens about that.
Well,
because we don't know much about Bahram's time as a prince, but eventually King Shapur died and was succeeded by Hormizd. And Hormizd himself died after a brief one-year reign. Potentially, there was some foul play involved, but who knows? Now, the point is that we need to figure out the succession now that Hormizd is dead. Because we have three options that we could go with. Each of them, you could make an argument for them. So option one is, well, Hormizd didn't have time to appoint his own successor, so let's go with standard succession and go with his eldest son. That's reasonable, you can make an argument for that. But it looks like nobody made this argument at the time. This could be because Hormizd's sons were all too young, which is kind of weird because Hormizd was in his 60s by this point, so you'd expect his sons to be in their 30s at the youngest. You know, it's unlikely that his only children would be younger than 15. That would be unusual. But hey, it could happen. You never know. Maybe he had one son and he was just 10 and that's all you could do. So okay, let's not consider this means of succession. Nobody looks at it. Line of succession two is continue to follow Shapur's list and go for Narseh. He's the next one in the list. He is the most talented son of Shapur still living. Let's go for him. And that is the argument that Narseh himself makes. He says, look at this, I've clearly shown I'm capable. I was clearly trusted by the most talented king that everybody has known so far. I should be the one succeeding. Option three is instead, well, Shapur's dead, Hormizd is dead, and nobody appointed a successor. So we should just follow the regular line of succession and go with the oldest son of Shapur, which is Bahram.
Hmm.
And as you can imagine, Bahram is advocating for this side.
Right. Convenient.
Yes. Now, we have these three options for succession, but who decides now, Serial? Who do you think has that power?
Whoever has the bigger military support, I assume.
And who gives military support? Where does that come from?
I don't know. Did we have, like, armies? I'm not up to date on the military situation right now.
Well, in the military situation, there is a royal army, but mm-hmm. a lot of the armies are in the hands of the nobles.
Yeah, right.
Which give a percentage of their army to the king. So the nobles have a say in this, but
of course.
To be fair, Narseh is a noble. He has the kingdom of Sakastan, and is the second largest kingdom in the empire, and he has those armies.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wants to, he can bear. But there's another element, which you were asking during Shapur's episode, wait, wasn't religion going to be more important and intolerant? Well, here it comes.
Oh. Here we go. All right.
Because Shapur had appointed a man called Kartir as head priest of the empire. And Kartir is the guy leading the direction for defining what Zoroastrianism is. And one day, we can only assume that Kartir went up to Bahram and said, "Hey, listen, your claim is reasonably legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
If you give me some concessions, I could press your claim and give you the advantage, so you become king. How does that sound?" And well, it looks like Bahram agreed to this. He thought it was a good enough deal. He agreed to give Kartir some of the religious power in the empire, and we'll see how that develops. And in exchange, Kartir would say, "Yep, the religious establishment says that Bahram should be king. He deserves it more than anyone else."
Clearly.
So, okay, great. So with Kartir's support, the nobles are swayed and Bahram is elected king of kings instead of his more capable brother.
Well.
But the problem is that Narseh has an army. He has a kingdom. So what would you do if you were Bahram? Your more talented brother has a kingdom, and you've just, you know, succeeded the throne, but according to Narseh, you've very likely usurped. What would you do?
Well, I just would not do this shit, but, you know,
if I had to usurp your brother's throne, I'd probably throw
a tantrum, because how dare.
Mm-hmm.
I deserve it more, so.
Yes.
I don't know, can we convince the nobles otherwise?
Well, the nobles have been convinced otherwise. Just need to convince the brother that's left.
Well, then we go to war.
To not rebel. You go to war?
Yeah.
Very well.
Because, yeah.
Well.
I think it's a stupid decision, but like, it was a stupid decision from the beginning, so.
Well, it looks like Bahram wasn't as confident as you, because he thought that if it comes to a direct war with his more talented brother, he is likely to lose. And this would not end well for anybody. It's a civil war. It's not fun. Why risk it? So he decides to go for another direction. He tells Narseh, "Listen, I can give you the most powerful kingdom in the empire. How about we swap your kingdom of Sakistan and you get Armenia?" Nobody was in charge of Armenia since Hormizd became king of kings. So Narseh, you can become king of Armenia.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound?
Or I could become king of the entire empire, so I don't know.
Exactly.
You know.
Now, the trick in this King of Armenia thing is that there is the implication that Narseh would be made heir, right? Because the last King of Armenia was Hormizd, and he was the heir to the throne for 30 years, and he was King of Armenia for 30 years. So it's sort of like, you know, to give a UK example, it's sort of like making somebody the Prince of Wales. I'm not explicitly saying you're the heir, but there is the implication that you're the heir. So we don't know if Bahram told Narseh, "Listen, I'll make you the heir, I'll make you king of Armenia." Or if he told Narseh, "I'll make you king of Armenia," wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it was implied that he might be the heir, or at least that's what Bahram allowed Narseh to think.
Right.
So, you know, maybe more or less explicitly, he's saying, "You can become king of kings after me."
Well, that's the thing, that he also, like, the more capable brother is put against this, like, unstable douchebag.
Yes.
Which, I don't know if the other brother was actually more capable, right? But, like, this is how we're characterizing them.
Yeah, based on the information we have, he was more capable.
So it might also be like, well, we can let him get his way and then just murder him.
Mm-hmm.
And avoid a war and avoid him causing more problems than he's worth, you know.
Fair enough. Also, Narseh gets to upgrade his kingdom to get the most powerful kingdom in the empire, and that means that if he wanted to revolt, he'd be in a stronger position anyway. So we might as well just take the deal and see what happens. So, well, yeah, Narseh accepts the deal. He says, "Okay, fine, I don't like that you succeeded." Mm. And in the future, Narseh will characterize Bahram as being illegitimate.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, he's saying, "Okay, fine, I'll take your deal. I'll become king of Armenia. I will accept you as king of kings." So, okay, there we are. Let's see how it goes. So succession has sort of been solved. Let's see how well Bahram does as king. Because we are told that he was not capable enough to be mentioned.
You will not believe what happens next.
Yeah. So, how is he described by the sources? Well, we're told that he was fond of fighting, hunting, and feasting. And Sassanid sources depict him as a benevolent and worthy king.
Huh.
Now, can you guess who is writing these sources?
The nobles?
Close. It's the clergy, to which Bahram has given a lot of power as part of a deal for the throne. Yes. So, kind of suspicious. We'll see what happens. Al-Tabari tells us, you know, following some Sassanid sources, that he was a patient and mild person, and he followed the example of his predecessors, and the people rejoiced when he came to power.
Oh, I mean, I'm impressed. I would love to know if that's true, because that's not the vibe
that's all we really get,
he gave me.
Yeah, same, but for now, he seems all right. We also have very limited mention of Bahram fighting a war in the east, but we have no further details. It's probably just a continuation of Shapur's wars to consolidate the new Kushano-Sassanid kingdom in Bactria. But again, we know very little. There were no massive changes that were worth mentioning overall. But the main course of Bahram's reign is the religious one. Because as we mentioned, previous kings had... the previous Sassanid kings, at least, had been generally tolerant. They had slight preference for Mazdaism or Zoroastrianism because the official propaganda showed them as receiving the right to rule from Ahura Mazda and all that. So they had a preference for it, but not that much. And it looks like Hormizd was especially interested in Manichaeism. And some even say that he converted, or at least the Manichaeans say. Yeah. Who knows if that was true? He died shortly after. We have no way of proving it.
Right. We discussed it.
Now, as part of the deal to make Bahram king, the head priest Kartir decides that he wants to get rid of Manichaeism.
Huh.
Because he wants Zoroastrianism to be the religion of the empire. He wants one empire, one religion, one king. He wants everything to be nice and orderly. So this is when we start persecuting other religions.
Ah.
Because, So, in 274, we had that Mani, the prophet of Manichaeism, had been allowed to preach in Babylon. Or, according to other interpretations, he had been limited to preaching in Babylon.
Yeah, I remember this.
Depends on who you ask. It's kind of iffy. But Mani decided to go further east into the empire and preach. But at that point, he was stopped by royal guards, and he was ordered to return to Ctesiphon. Which sort of matches with the fact that he was limited to only Babylon.
Yeah.
Who knows? He was told, no, you can't go here. But it looks like the main triggering issue was that Mani had managed to convert a minor king called Bat.
Mm.
And Bahram was furious at this fact. You can convert common people, not minor kings. That messes with the nobility and messes with the status quo.
We didn't actually want to grant you the power to change the things.
Yeah, or at least not under this new regime with Kartir in charge. Bahram was furious, so he ordered Mani and this vassal king Bat to come to Ctesiphon to answer their crimes. Wisely, it seems that Bat stayed away and reconverted. We're told that Mani traveled to his hometown one last time before meeting the king at the new capital of Gundishapur. And here we get a scene from some Pahlavi fragments, which were supposedly from Mani's Persian interpreter. Because Mani knew some Persian, but, you know, as everybody who has a second language knows, you don't want to go to the king to defend your life in a second language that you don't really know that well. You would like to be able to have the words be the words you want, not be the ones that you think might be good. So we're told that Bahram met Mani after lunch, just before he was meant to go hunting. And now I quote, "The king rose from the table, and putting one arm around the queen of the Sakas, and the other around Kartir, the son of Ardavan, he came towards the lord." So we can see here that Kartir is front and center. He has made his deal with the king to make him king, and he wants to make sure that now his most dangerous rival religion is properly dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure who this Queen of the Sakas is. Some people think she might be the wife of Narseh, but Narseh is now King of Armenia, so why isn't she just called Queen of Armenia?
Yeah.
Bit weird. We're not sure who it is. But anyway. In any case, Bahram addresses Mani, and his first words to the Lord were, "You are not welcome," the Lord replied. "What wrong have I done?" The king said, "I have sworn not to let you come into this country." So not really answering the question.
Yeah. So like you told him it was okay. And I was like,
yeah, he thought it was fine. Mani was like, you know, I was just preaching goodwill to mankind. I was preaching to be nice to each other. Is that so big a crime?
Apparently.
And the text continues, "And in anger, Bahram spoke thus to the Lord. What are you good for, since you go neither fighting nor hunting? But perhaps you are needed for doctoring and physicking. And you don't even do that." The Lord replied thus, "I have not done you any wrong. Always I have done good to you and your family. Many and numerous were your servants whom I have freed of demons and witches. Many were those whom I have made rise from their illnesses. Many were those from whom I averted the numerous kinds of fever. Many were those who were on the point of death, and I have revived them." And so this medical part is referring to the fact that one of Bahram's sisters had died, supposedly due to Mani's neglect in treating her.
Ooh.
But Mani had been traveling for about 3 years at this point, so it's unlikely it was actually his fault. Maybe he had just sent a letter recommending something, but kind of unclear, so it's kind of messy. And yeah, of course, this is a Manichaean source, so they're not going to paint Bahram very favorably. He says, you know, why are you good at anything if you're not hunting or feasting?
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, but you know, that's not my job. I'm not the king. I'm a prophet. My job is different.
I do prophet things.
But in any case, we see that Cartier is here and he is gently directing what's happening. We have a couple of different versions about how Mani was interrogated. According to Al-Biruni, it looks like Bahram pretended to convert to Manichaeism only to gather Mani and his followers and then trap them and arrest everybody.
Hmm.
According to Al-Tabari, Bahram was interested in Manichaeism and interrogated Mani, asking him about his faith. And then he found that he was, and I quote, "a propagandist for Satan." So he decided to have him imprisoned.
Dang.
Not great. So in the end, through the influence of Cartier, Mani was executed, either by starvation or 26 days of torture, or according to later Manichaean text, he was crucified like his previous incarnation of Jesus Christ.
Heck.
So we're not sure. According to some sources, he was later flayed and displayed above the city gates.
Hmm.
Others say just his severed head was displayed publicly, but who knows. And with the prophet dead, a quick reversal of state policy followed, and across all the empire, Manichaeans were persecuted, and religious orthodoxy and Zoroastrianism was strongly emphasized, with Cartier's hand driving everything.
Mm.
And oh great, Cartier got a promotion. That's nice for him, isn't it? But that's all we really get for Bahram, because he died in September of 274, somewhere in his 60s, after 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days, which is a nice number. And who do you think he was succeeded by?
I hope it was the brother that he promised would succeed him.
Absolutely not, Serial.
Yeah, of course.
He was succeeded by his son, Bahram II.
Okay.
We'll see how the brother takes this news. It will be an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, wonderfully, I'm sure. He's a reasonable man.
Like, I mean, take my throne from me once, shame on you. Take my throne from me twice, shame on me. And yeah, so that is the life of Bahram, and this is why religion is becoming more of its own leg to stand on. This will cause problems for the future. This is why having religion as a third pole in your country is not great.
Hmm.
So yeah, what are your thoughts, Ariel? Impressed by Bahram? Expected worse? Expected better?
That went more or less how I expected it to go, honestly.
Fair enough.
Expected much worse, but I guess we will get to talk about like the impact that this had in the empire.
Yeah,
soon.
He didn't have much time. His son will have more time to
the best that he didn't have much time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was regarded as the worst, so There we are.
Dang. I thought he was regarded as, like, you know, reasonable and benevolent.
I mean, it depends. He was regarded as personable and benevolent by the sources that presumably he was favoring, so
yeah.
There we are.
No, that's what I mean. Like, it was a bit sarcastic, but, you know.
Yeah.
He hasn't necessarily been painted as, like, the worst.
No, exactly. He's been painted as kind of the worst from the Manichaeans, because when you kill someone's prophet, they tend to be miffed. You know, it's not a nice thing to do to someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, we'll see. Also, just to preempt this, if you're interested in more about Cartier and Mani, they are up next in our Patreon, so subscribe to that if you want to hear their lives. But okay, so are you ready to rate Bahram the First, Serial?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go. So our first category is Final Moments. How interesting was his death?
He just died.
Dying somewhere in his 60s, presumably of natural causes. You know, I would give it a zero. It's not even, you know, there's not the satisfaction of dying after a long, glorious reign. It's just like, meh.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm a zero. How about you?
Same. No comment.
Very good.
Nothing to add.
So, yeah, with a zero and a zero, we get a 0 out of 10 for final moments. Our next category is Battle Hardness. How good was he at war and fighting? Well, as a prince, he is given the cushiest job you could be given and didn't really fight at all. So nothing there, unlike Hormizd, who was constantly fighting as king of Armenia.
Because, you know, he
was the good son
that, he was
that was meant to succeed and last longer, but no. Bahram then maybe fought a bit of a war in the east. If he did fight that war, it was so not consequential that we don't know about it. So honestly, I'd give him maybe just a 1 because we hear of something happening, but we don't know enough about it to care. So yeah, I think I'm going to go for a 1 on Battle Hardness. There's not much to recommend.
Yeah, he didn't even do, like, he doesn't even get the, oh, I am savage and, like, would be a bad ruler because I'm sadistic, but, like, I'm a great general or something. Like, no, just 0. Just,
yeah, no, it's just like
nothing. Meh. Just meh.
So, yeah. Are you sticking with a 1 as well, or are you going for a 0?
No, I'll go with a 1. That's...
Okay, fair.
Perhaps not 0-0, but, you know.
Yeah.
Eh.
So, with a 1 and a 1, we get a 2 out of 20 for Battle Hardness, being the worst Sassanid. I have a feeling he'll be the worst Sassanid at the end of this anyway, but let's find out. Our next category is Scheminess. How good at plots and manipulations was he? Here he has something, because, you know, arguably he was not meant to be the heir, and, oh look, he's the heir now.
Yeah.
That's weird. I wonder how that happened. You know, he clearly makes a deal with Cartier to take the throne.
Yeah.
He clearly makes a deal with Narsay to not start a civil war.
Yeah.
So he's relatively good at that and making these manipulations to make sure that everything goes his way. So I think that's worth something. It's not the highest scheminess ever, but, you know, worth something. He does somehow orchestrate a coup, presumably. Yeah. And if we believe that he killed Hormizd, he does that too.
True.
Because... You know, if you believe the Hormizd was murdered into his reign, well, then it was either Bahram or Cartier, and they were working together in any case. So that's some scheminess there. I'm hovering between a 3 and a 4. What are your thoughts? Which way are you leaning?
I will go for a 3 because I don't want to give him credit. I don't
Fair.
Like him enough.
Having researched Cartier does feel like a Cartier move. Does feel like Cartier making use of, you know, a nearby useless prince. And it's like, hey kid, do you want to be king?
Yeah.
I can make that happen. Just give me absolute religious power. Okay, great. Love it.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I agree. You've swayed me. I'm going to go with a 3 as well. So, okay. With a 3 and a 3, we get a 6 out of 20 for scheminess. Our next category is shock factor. How shocking was this man? He does quite a few shocking things. Well, he regularly takes the throne. I guess that's relatively less shocking. Like, if you're just somebody hearing the news, it's more like, the nobles chose this guy. It's like, all right, fair enough. I guess it's their right to choose one. The more shocking thing is, he kills Mani. He kills the prophet of this religion. That's not cool.
Yeah, no.
That's not fun. He starts persecuting an entire religion in the empire. He turns the religious policy of the empire from, yeah, do whatever, just obey the king, to, no, you follow this specific type of religion,
yeah, that's gonna
or
have,
you will be
that's
hunted
gonna
down.
That's going to have consequences.
Yes. The Manichaeans are not going to be happy about this. There is a reason Manichaeism is not a living religion. Although I did find out there is a very derived version of Manichaeism in China.
Oh.
It's like Mormonism to Christianity, so it's like, it's pretty separate, but the vibe is still kind of there. So yeah, shock factor, I think it's a bit, you know, persecuting people is not fun. You should not do that. Here I'm between a 4 and a 5, because it's quite a bit. He doesn't really ramp up the persecutions too much, but to be fair, he didn't have too much time to do that, so meh. What are you thinking?
I don't know, I don't have a strong opinion.
A strong opinion? I'm going to go with a 5, because it's not often that you get to kill a prophet.
Yeah, that's fair. I expected much worse, to be fair.
Yeah, he's
why
not going
I'm
full
like,
Caligula,
I mean,
or something,
you know.
But you know. Like, Shapur deported hundreds of thousands of people. That's kind of worse.
Yeah.
But, you know, killing a prophet is a rare, special occasion.
It was mean, too, because the prophet had been told that it was fine. And then it wasn't fine suddenly.
Yeah, the prophet was like, I did nothing but help you. Why are you angry at me? Please. My message is, let's not be so mean to each other. Why can't we all get along? Why must you kill me?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go with your 5.
Which is a common theme for prophets.
Yes.
Say, why can't we all get along, you heretic? How dare you say something so outrageous?
Prophets have, you know, the job comes with some risks.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to go for a 5. What are you thinking?
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I think a 5 is 5
good. As well? Okay. Quite a high score. So, with a 5 and a 5, we get a 10 out of 20 for shock factor. Our next category is Aaron Shine. How good was he for the Empire in general and Iran in particular?
Well,
he...
Did anything happen?
So, to be fair, he didn't have too much time to mess things up, but...
Thank goodness.
We will have people that managed to royally mess things up in a few months or in a few days. Like, I'm researching the end of the Empire. Things go bad fast. So, you know... Credit where credit's due. The Empire doesn't crash and burn within the first 30 days. But...
Love that.
You know, to look at the Empire before and after
love
him...
Love this premise. Yeah. Can't wait.
He fights a bit of this war in the East, but not many changes. He doesn't really fight with the Romans, but the Romans were busy picking themselves up. After the crisis of the 3rd century, they were in no fit state to attack, so...
Yeah, the Romans haven't appeared in a while.
Yeah, there wasn't really much
Would
of a challenge
look at that?
There. Oh, that's great. Once you punch them in the face for 40 years repeatedly, then they stop
they stay
for a
quiet.
Bit.
Such yeah, bliss.
Nice. They'll be back eventually, but, you know, for now, let's enjoy the quiet.
This is so terrible. I'm sorry.
Internally, it's mostly negatives because we are persecuting a religious group. That's not great. This religious group was popular. When you're persecuting people, that's not good for your empire. That's just making things worse.
Yeah.
And something that is also considerably worse is that he has given leverage on power to Kartir. So previously under Shapur and Ardashir and Hormizd, religious power was fully vested in the King of Kings. Now part of that power has been delegated to the High Priest, and the king no longer has that power. So now the religious establishment is like, it's still developing. It's still not fully transformed into this under Bahram the First, but it's turning into like a second branch of the nobility. But this time they're religiously motivated. So that we're going to have to deal with that for the next 400 years.
That sounds fun. Sounds
so
like
that's
trouble.
Not good. And yeah, it's just a seed for now. I think others will do worse. But I feel like Bahram is letting the Empire coast. I'd remove 1 point for the religious persecution and 1 point for the losing religious power for the king. Because he's unleashed this new religious thing that he can't really control.
Yeah.
And is just making the empire worse. It's not like, they're just opening schools and orphanages. It's just like, oh no, religion is more independent now and they're persecuting others. That's not great. So yeah, I think I'm going to go for a 3. I would go harsher, but his son is worse. And I think we should point that out.
I hope he will not last long. But
we'll see what Narseh has to say about that.
Yeah, save us, King of Armenia now. Rightful heir. Please. Yes.
I love that Narseh's in the background of this episode and the next episode, just like silently fuming.
Yeah.
We will find out what happens to him, but it's just like, it's a good story. What is your Aaron Shine thought?
Like, bad. I guess not terrible, but not good.
No.
I will go... What have we done? Because I always want to go negative with this. Because when someone does something bad for the Empire, it's like... But I guess if nothing changes, we should give it a 5. Is that what we've done other times?
The standard thing we've agreed on is...
We always discuss this, and every time I'm like...
Yeah. Is that a 5 is... You got the Empire in one state. You gave it to your successor in the same state in which you got it.
Which, like... In my eyes, it's already like an accomplishment. Like, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess that's why we give it a 5 and not like a 0. Like,
exactly. And if you know, the idea is that if the Empire decays under you, well, then God works. Like, we gave Hormizd a 6 because he kept the Empire stable, vaguely continued his father's good policies.
Yeah.
Did a reasonably good job.
Yeah, so it's like -1 point because of the religious... Just tobacco.
Yes.
And how were the, like, geographically, did we lose
If you
territory?
Look at the Empire on a map, there is no difference before and
okay.
after.
But people have a worse quality of life because, like, forcing people to subscribe to one religion or another has, like, a huge impact on their lives.
Yeah, it's directly. Not great.
Yeah, I want to take 2 points off because of that. So I'll go with a 3.
That's entirely fair. Okay, so you're also matching with a 3. Fair enough. So with a 3 and a 3, we get a 6 out of 20 for Aaron Shine. Our next category is Face of Faces. What do you think this man looked like? And I will send you his crown.
Hey.
Because despite being a bad man, he has a cool crown.
Hmm.
Maybe a bit too edgy, but, you know.
Ain't that
I
the
respect
way.
It. Okay, so Cyril has finished their drawing. Let me pick it up and I'll describe to you what it looks like. Ooh! Delightfully devilish.
Honestly, he does not deserve the charm.
Fair enough. So, what we have is Bahram here. He's dressed as the typical Sassanid king, as you would expect. He has a lovely punkish crown with, like, some spikes along the edge and then a big round poof on the top, as we've become used to it. He has a nice beard, which is tied together in sort of a ponytail fashion. And then he is grinning maniacally and raising his hands to be... Delightfully devilish, as you would expect him to be. Because, oh look, I'm going to kill a prophet. What else are we going to do?
I am the king. I did it.
So,
suck
good.
It, dad.
Yeah, suck it, dad. Who's not the favorite now?
And you still suck.
Yes, you still suck. We still know. Yeah, also, your son is terrible, so we'll find out about that later.
Mm.
But anyway... If you want to check this out, you can go on the Discord if you're a patron, or you can go in the episode notes just below, or you can go to our website in Serial's Portrait Gallery, and this is where you'll find him. Now let me show Serial what he actually looked like, and we have a relief.
Let's go.
And again, it is...
It's not a coin!
It is a relief with an investiture of him by Horamazda, as most of these are for now, but let me show you. Here he is. Bahram is to the right.
Oh, cool. He looks so kick-ass. Is he just receiving the crown from...
Yeah, he's receiving the far, the right to rule from Ahuramazda, presumably.
Well, press X to...
Because he's totally legitimate and nothing ever went wrong. Don't question
But
it.
This relief is so pretty. This is so not fair.
They are good at making reliefs.
He does not deserve this.
Also, I love how in the relief there's a little cutout for the top of his crown because they clearly didn't plan for that much, which is great.
That's so funny. Oops, I didn't account for this being so big. Yeah, so it's two people facing each other while on horseback. So there's two horses facing each other and the two people riding the horses on profile. And so it's presumably a Ahura Mazda to the left, handing essentially a wreath with a long flowy fabric, kind of like a diadem, over to Bara. And I am mad at how cool it looks. Like, you can see the flows of the pants, like the fabric folding and the decorations of the respective crowns. And well, Ahura Mazda, I don't know if like they wear a crown or like
tell
what.
Tell if it's a crown
or some decoration.
It's hair, because it looks like
It might actually just be hair.
Now that I look at this, let me check a thing real quick.
Da-da-da-da-da. I am not familiar enough with representations of Ahura Mazda.
Oh ho ho! It's Ahura Mazda, and his crown is Shapur's crown.
Right.
So that's interesting.
So that, because that's what I thought, and it was like, I swear to God,
Daddy loves me after all.
Yeah. If this is a reference to like, oh, my father is handing me the crown, I will fucking riot. That is not okay.
That might be an implication. Yes.
This is such bullshit. It's a really pretty relief, though.
It is very good. I mean, the artist he commissions did a good job.
Also, reliefs are really hard to do from experience, because you do have some 3D qualities to it, but you can't just full on do a sculpture. So you need to choose which things to like make a little bit on relief, but not enough, and which things to like sculpt more. And it is surprisingly difficult to like imply perspective without building the perspective.
Oh,
when
yeah.
You are working on a medium that allows you to build perspective, you know, like you are working on 3D, but you're not working on like actual all of the dimensions of 3D. It's like working on 2.5 dimensions.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine it's very difficult, but the early Sassanids are great at their reliefs.
It's
do
so good
work.
It's so pretty.
Yes.
I love how the horses are stylized too.
Yeah, it's a cool really stylization good. Where it's like, it's very horse, but it's also, yeah. It's also
and they're like very strong.
Stylistically.
Because there's a lot of ways you can stylize a horse, and also depending on the horse breeds that you're like referencing, some of them are more elegant and like spindly, and some of them are like more sturdy and like for war horses, right? These are like really nice example.
Yes.
Good really example. Pretty. I want to give this a 10, but I won't because I hate him. And the fact that he has, but also the fact that he has the audacity of commissioning this kind of gives him points.
Yes, fair enough.
I'll give it a 9.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll agree. I think I'll also go for a 9 because it's good, but it's not Shapur levels of great, but it is still very impressive.
True. Shapur had a really impressive.
Okay, so with a 9 and a 9, he gets a 4.5 out of 5 for Face of Faces, which is very respectable and definitely in the top list. Our next category is lengthiness. How long do you think this man reigned?
Well, he didn't have that much time, so maybe 5 years?
He reigned 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days.
Less than I thought, actually. I was more between 5 and 10 than...
Yeah, it was, he didn't rule for very long. He didn't have time to mess things up that badly. But we will see. He'll be able to do some stuff. So he ruled from 271 to 274. That's 3 years divided by 10 is 0.3 points out of 5 for lengthiness. And that brings us to the final score, which is a grand total of 28.8 out of 100, making him the worst Sassanid king.
Yep. Not surprised. He's going to go see his father, and his father is going to be like, you idiot.
Yes, bonk him definitely. In the head. He should be appropriately bonked because, come on, my dude, what are you doing?
I told you for a reason, and look what you've done. You were only there for 3 years, and now this is going to have such repercussions.
Yes, this is going to have repercussions you just proved for me everybody.
Right.
And now we know why you weren't chosen. That's why I gave you the easiest job in the Empire. Just don't. So, you know, daddy issues.
Bang.
That leads him roughly under Alexander Balas, just 0.1 point beneath him, and above Artaxerxes the First. So he is roughly under the... I'm actually surprised he's above Artaxerxes the First, probably because of all the drama. and possibly murdering his brother. So,
like we say many times, this podcast doesn't rate only on like how good a king was.
Yeah, it's how dramatic are you?
Yeah.
Okay, so that leads us to the final question, which is to say, is he plotty enough? Is he prophet murdery enough? Is he mustache twirly enough to be a Shahanshah? Or is he just a Shahanah?
Honestly, like, I wasn't going to dismiss it immediately because I'm like, it could have been, right? It could have been much more, like, dramatic. But, like, it wasn't really. It was disappointing in that, too, so.
Yeah, I feel like he's not so evil cartoonishly that he is fun to talk about. He's more like, oh, and this guy messed everything up for everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, great. Love it. Good stuff. So yeah, I think without too much remorse, we could tell Bahram to head off into the desert, meet his brother Hormizd, who he may be murdered.
Yeah, they can battle it out.
And explain why everything is getting worse now. Please.
Like, well, I thought I
things
could do
were
it.
Good for a while.
The worst thing is
no.
that he probably doesn't feel bad about it, you know?
It's oh, like, no.
Yeah,
sure
I did a great job. Look.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did they have to kill
not
me?
Somebody who has the self-consciousness to examine.
If only.
All right. So, yeah, that is the end of our episode. We hope you had a good time, and we hope you join us next time for Bahram II, the son who, as I have anticipated, is not going to do much better. But he has more time, so...
Great.
Let's see how that goes. Good stuff.
How
good
bad
stuff.
Could this be?
Mostly, let's see if Narsay can save us from the chaos that's happening. Please, Narsay. You were thought to be competent by Shapur. You might be able to fix things.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the meantime, if you would like to support us, then there are several ways you can do that. You can support us on Patreon, join valued patrons such as Caitlin McLaren and J.R. Randall, who just joined since last episode. So thank you very much for your support.
We have shoutouts now.
Yes. And yeah, if you want to know more about Kartir and Mani, they are part of the new series that has been voted on by our patrons. We'll also have Gregory the Illuminator, the man who brought Christianity to Armenia. That'll be important for our story because, you know, Armenia.
Turns out.
So there we are. And we also just released the episode on Ashoka the Great from the Maurya Empire. So that was very cool. Lots of myths and twists and turns.
We recorded that
Find
2 days
out about
ago
that.
And it was really fun.
Yes, good stuff.
2 days ago at the time of recording. By the time this comes out, I don't know anymore.
If instead you'd rather not support us monetarily, that's fine. But we appreciate if you could give us a review on your podcast app of choice, because that makes it so that other people know we exist and that you appreciate us, which we always like.
Yeah, we read all the reviews, and some of them are really sweet, so thank you so much.
That leads us to the end, and without much further ado, we hope you have a good week, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.